Mario's Sunday Roast on Today FM with Mario Rosenstock.
Welcome back to Mario's Sunday Roast. Now, one of the most common expressions I hear out there, and actually some of the most annoying expressions from people I hear, are, I'm thinking of starting my own podcast. There are literally millions of people who want to start their own podcast out there. And even Waterford Whispers News did a very humorous report recently, which had the headline, Entire Population of Ireland to Have Own Podcast by the Year 2030, which made me laugh out loud. And like everything, podcasts cater for the good and the bad, the quality and the crap. But for people who like podcasts out there, one of the most liked and respected and longest lasting out there has been a podcast called The Irish Man Abroad. And the man behind it is my special guest today on Mario's Sunday Roast, Jarlath Regan. Welcome to Mario's Sunday Roast.
Thank you, Mario. Great to be here.
Great to have you. And so do you prefer now being, we've turned the tables now, do you prefer to be interviewed or to do an interview?
Way prefer asking the questions, definitely. Definitely. But, you know, the interviews that I do, you're not peppering people with questions and going, you tell me the answers. My chats are chats. They're more like, I find the more you give of yourself, the more the person's willing to give of themselves.
Yes.
They don't feel that it's just me prying. It's actually me offering some of my life experience too. So, yeah, so I tend to do a bit more talking than your typical interviewer.
Good. Well, I'm expecting you to really give of yourself today, Charles. Now, I want my pound of flesh, right?
Yeah.
So, The Irish Man Abroad is now about 6 years old, is it?
Yeah. We're approaching 300 episodes in June 15th. We've got a gala extravaganza on South Bank on the 15th of June to mark that. But, yeah, it's been 5-6 years every Sunday without missing a Sunday for that many years.
And this is the trick, of course, the consistency, isn't it?
Consistency, yeah. I thought that in the start was we could just need to become part of people's routine, because there's something really comforting about that. You know, you know that there's something really good on a Sunday. It's nice, right? And that I just wanted that. I believed that if we could do that, then we stood a chance. That's it.
And how did it get started? So did you have an idea to do a podcast, or was it a confluence of flukes, or did something happen and went...
Yeah, I guess I was listening to an awful lot of them. I was on the road. I was moving to the UK in 2013 and sleeping on airport floors and just taking whatever shows I could. And my company was podcasts. Mark Maron, Pete Holmes, Fresh Air, Alec Baldwin. These people were really getting me through this really difficult time of uncertainty. And I didn't put it together, you should do one. Until I realised, I don't know what I'm doing here. I really don't know how to be an Irishman abroad or break England. But loads of Irish people had done it, and I knew loads of them. So the first person I rang was Graham Linehan, and he was like, yeah, let's record it. And I remember recording it sitting on my bed in the first house I rented without a clue, like without a notion of how to edit, where how I was going to put it up.
And was he there or was he on Skype?
He was on Skype.
Yeah, yeah.
And... I recorded it and I knew it was a really fun, good chat, but I didn't know where to go from there. I knew what it was called. I just took a punt, I can do this. And then I found an old friend, Brian Connolly, who was doing a PhD in sound in Maynooth. So can you help me do this? And Brian and I have been producing the podcast ever since.
Wow. And you were working as a comedian at the time?
Course,
and
yeah,
still are, of course.
Still are. I was really in the starting over in many ways, because when you go over there, they just want you to just try out. You have to try out everywhere. Pretty much everybody has had to try out, every Irish comic that's gone over. So you're doing these kind of soul destroying 5 minute spots, and you can't write new stuff because they want to see your best stuff. And they're wary. They're wary. The market's so saturated with comics. They're like, you really have to blow the doors off in the 5 minutes or there's somebody else to take your spot. So it was pretty tough time. I mean, there's harder work, as we know. There's tarring roofs and working anywhere else is harder.
Well, there is. There is. But at least you know that tomorrow you're going to be tarring a roof. You have no idea what you're going to be doing as a comedian, whether you ever work again.
Yeah. And we had a small, small baby at the time. And... you know, Ireland didn't want us. And there was a certain aspect of that. I've said this before, that there was a real sense at that time that Ireland expected you to leave.
Mm.
And I remember Enda Kenny saying that. That was This is part of our culture and our tradition. And it felt a little bit like you were at a house party and the people that owned the house walked into the sitting room wearing their pajamas. Yeah. You were like, oh, I gotta go now. And that feeling of not being wanted in your own country, I know for a lot of the listeners, was something we all identified with. And, you know, it made for a difficult period, but I think I've come through that. And
yeah.
Now, in many ways, my journey now is home, is how to get back. That's really
well.
The journey.
We'll get to that actually. Yeah, but did you feel a certain sense of resentment then?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, you're also blaming yourself as well. Like people don't talk about there's a rosy version of the immigrant story, which is that you're going to discover yourself and build your career elsewhere and come home a success. But there's so much the sense that I failed. I had all the shots and they didn't want it. No one's interested. And, you know, I know there's it doesn't matter what industry you're in, there is that's tough. And it's why some people don't come back. But I know tons of people are, you know, on the go away to come back. I mean, we want to send our son to secondary school in Ireland because the education system here is unbelievable.
Very interesting.
When you're in the middle of Brexit and explaining to people in Britain their geography and history, you realise that would not happen here. You wouldn't leave secondary school without that knowledge.
Very interesting, Charles. I did a gig about 2 years ago over in London in a well-to-do area in Knightsbridge, and it was a fundraiser for Munster Rugby, and a lot of rich people in the audience. And I did the gig and it went well. And then afterwards, they were milling around in the bar having some drinks. And I remember seeing these guys from a distance and holding court. And I went, they're Irish. These two guys that are in the centre of the group, they're Irish. So I went over and sure enough, they were Irish and all the people around them were English. And the two guys were just like, it's the gift of the gab. So these guys were holding court. They were controlling the group and they were Irish. And I got talking to them and I said, how are you doing, lads? And they went, Mario, great to see you. It's great to see you over in London. How are you doing over here? We're killing it over here. We're having an amazing time. And I went, you love London? Yeah, it's great. We're rocking it. And I went, do you have any kids? Yeah, they're small. She's small. And again, so you're going to send her to school here? No way. His face totally changed. And he went, there's no way I want my little daughters going, hello, daddy. Peppa Pig is on.
Yeah.
And he said, that. I want, they're coming back and they're sticking a Hurley in their hand. So in other words, there was a duality. They loved London. They wanted to be, but then they went, but I'm not sending my kids to school here. I want to come back to Ireland.
There's something about the education system. There's another thing tied in there in the accent that, you know, my son definitely has an English accent and, you know, people have hang-ups about that. But the education thing is a justified hang-up. There's such a stratification of what school you went to there. Like, you think that exists here until you go there and you realise people are moving house. They're renting houses near schools that they want to attend.
Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of sad. It's a sad aspect because there's so many beautiful, brilliant things over there too.
Yeah. And so just harking back to what you said a minute ago, do you think you are on a road to coming home?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So the podcast will become An Irish Man Comes Home.
Who knows? Who knows? Because I would imagine I'll split my time, you know. But definitely there's a strand of the podcast now that is about the journey back. And success, like I think as inspirational as it was for people, I knew people used to get in touch and go, I had no idea that, you know, Chris O'Dowd, for example, couldn't pay his TV bill when Bridesmaids was out and that he went on Conan, came back to his house and the TV was cut off. He couldn't watch himself. He went to the pub to watch it. And that was inspiring for people who had just moved. I think that now
that's a great story.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one. And so many of those cropped up and those were inspiring for people that just moved. Now I feel like there's a chance here to inspire people to come home.
Brilliant. And you're in the world of comedy and you've picked a couple of clips for us today. And the first is a comedy clip. And who is it?
Well,
An Irish Man Abroad.
Well, Dylan Moran was probably maybe the first comic that I saw. And I thought I would love to do that. You know, I'd really, in a dream, I would love to be that or do that or something similar to it. And I went to see the recording of the Monster DVD, which among my peers is regarded as an absolute masterpiece. And if you haven't seen Monster, I urge you to seek it out now because it's so beautifully crafted and such a wonderful piece of stand-up that if you weren't a fan of Dylan Moran until now, you will be after this.
Or even those really moronic little books, you know, you get now, How to Release the Inner You, or Find the 95 Habits of Totally Effective Tosspots You Don't Want to Talk to in the First Place. So. Or Release Your Potential, that's another one. Now that's a very, very dangerous idea. You should stay away from your potential. I mean, that is something you should leave absolutely alone. Don't, you'll mess it up. It's potential, leave it. And anyway, it's like your bank balance. You know, you always have a lot less than you think. You don't look at it. You don't know. Leave it as a kind of the locked door within yourself. And that's how it should be. Because then at least in your mind, the interior will always be palatial, you know? Wonderful gleaming marble floors, brocaded drapes, mullioned windows covered in mullions, whatever they are. And flamingos serving drinks. Don't open the door, because it won't be like that. All you can see will be one tiny, grey, startling little cat with diarrhoea, sitting on a mattressless, iron-sprung bed with its huge eyes mewing at you. Smoking as well, probably.
Just classic.
And great use of language, lovely language.
Like, That will stand the test of time. Like, and yeah, I mean, that was always my dream for the stand-up that I write, was to write things that would last the way Dylan's stuff does.
And clearly there's comics often talk about the waves of laughter there. Yeah. See, the line produces a laugh, and then it's a further wave, and then he rides that wave and jumps on the next wave.
Completely.
You've interviewed Dylan.
I have.
And so interviewing people, do you find that people surprise you in the sense that, yeah, he worked out or she worked out kind of how I might have imagined they worked out? Or do they often deceive you?
I think the worst thing you can do is go in with an idea. And to me, any time I've gone in going, I'll talk about this, and then I'll talk about this, and then I'll do this, and I bet they'll love this, you're done. You're in so much trouble that you don't even realise those preconceptions and assumptions will hammer you throughout it. There's so many analogies to just life in general, keeping an open mind and listening. I mean, to me, that was... I don't put myself up there as some kind of genius of this thing, because it's ultimately just chat, right? It's just talking, listening, eye to eye. But to me, it's following where it goes and being prepared for the turns it takes. I would pride myself on the amount of research that goes into them, and that I try and uncover things they don't think anybody knows about. And that's a compliment. Isn't it?
It is.
You've been interviewed. I
did. And I just remember seeing your reams of little notes in front of me. This guy's just, he's made an effort.
Well, this is it.
But
right?
Then what happens is, I guess, that you don't need to fall back on half of that, because the conversation then takes off. Okay, Charlotte, stay with me. We're going to take a little commercial break. After this, I'm going to be back to you talking about things which you've been asked about a million times. Just keep with me on Mario's Sunday Roast.
Mario's Sunday Roast on Today FM with Mario Rosenstock.
Welcome back to Mario's Sunday Roast. I'm here with comedian and podcaster, Jarlath Regan. Jarlath, do you get embarrassed listening to yourself?
I would, yeah. I don't really listen back to the episodes, and I don't listen back to my stand-up. I just don't think that's a fun thing to do, or a positive thing to do.
Okay, here you are.
Hello, London Palladium. Hello there. What a huge night. This is actually, I'll be honest with you, this is a huge week for me. I am 16 years with my wife this week. Thank you. 16 years ago, I met her in the first term of university. I saw her across the student bar, and I'm sorry to get schmaltzy, but this is the truth. I saw her across the student bar, and I knew in that moment, I'm probably not going to do much better than that.
That's good, Charles, because there's a lot of jeopardy on that end line. People are going, this is taking a bit long here. Yeah. Needs a nice payoff. And
well,
it was good.
I love silence. I really do love silence.
So do the audience.
Yeah, there's something about, like, one of my favourite jokes has probably got the longest setup of any joke available. And I just love the doubt that creeps in when you talk slow. And I do talk slow. It's always
been
my style.
Jeopardy. Your wife, kids, and it kind of in tangential way brings me into this whole thing. Some of the listeners out there bring me to the story of the kidneys, and which led to your last one of your last shows.
Yeah.
And take us into that story.
Well, I guess my brother had never been well. Something not quite right there for years and years. Nobody could figure out what's going on. And then when he moved to the States, just they really want, his wife really wanted to puzzle out why do your hands shake, you know? And she basically got him to the Mayo Clinic, and they discovered a bunch of issues that could have been spotted very early on that ultimately led to him needing a kidney, and that his kidneys were in rag order, about to go on dialysis. He gets in touch, and I fly over and test, and I'm a really good match. And on February 2nd, 2017, I gave him one of my kidneys. Now he has three. I've got one. That's not a joke. They don't take out the graft ones.
Yeah,
they
don't write
them in.
To leave it there.
And he is flying now. Like this is the really extraordinary thing, and the reason why I put out a new episode of the podcast around this was, you know, I didn't know as much as I needed to know. I think I went into it a bit blind. And a lot of the show, Organ Freeman, that I wrote about, it was about how I didn't know what I was doing.
Did you just go into it with sheer love?
Yeah.
I love my...
Yeah, but look, it's the ultimate sound man thing to do.
And did you follow the story of, for example, someone like Joe Brawley?
I did.
Because you're a massive sports fan.
Joe, yeah. Mm. And, you know, I put together an episode at the time to make a documentary out of the piece and to kind of educate myself in a lot of ways. And I knew of Joe's story, which is a story of altruistic donation, which is not something that's facilitated in Ireland right now. He did it. He was able to do that because he was in Northern Ireland. You can't walk into a hospital now and go, I hear you need kidneys. Oh. I've got one. But with the new opt-out system that Simon Harris has proposed, that will be possible. And if anything, that opt-out conversation will produce more organs. It's madness that we don't all carry them. And so I'm all for the opt-out.
Yeah. Yes. And you said something positive there about somebody. Simon Harris.
Yeah. The reality is that we all make mistakes. And I don't for a second think that it was Simon Harris's idea to spend that much on the children's hospital. But I do think that if the fire brigade spent too much on a fire engine, they don't stop putting out fires. The organ situation in this country and kidney donation and organ transplants are a raging fire that will go on and on and on. And Simon's proposed this game-changing proposal, like a full-on game changer that will revolutionise how this issue is dealt with. And we can look at that in isolation.
Yeah. Okay. Jared, let's get to your film clip choice. Tell us about this one.
Well, I chose this scene from Good Will Hunting. It's a bit of a long scene, but it's a linchpin of the movie in Good Will Hunting, which is a movie that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon wrote themselves in a flat when they realised nobody's going to put us in movies. I identify with that straight away. Not because nobody's going to put me in movies. I'm literally turning away scripts every day. But I definitely made my own station, made my own radio show. And they did that too. And it's so inspiring when people just go, I'm going to green light my own idea. And the scene itself is incredible too, because they spent years rewriting this script. And on the day they shot this, they did it once. And Gus Van Sant was like, yeah, got it. And they were like, no, let's do it again. Like, no. There's something, as you know, Mario, about being in the moment and in performance of just being there. And there's something unique about that first time you do it. Fresh and beautiful.
Look, you're my best friend, so don't take this the wrong way. In 20 years, if you're still living here, coming over to my house to watch the Patriots game, still working construction, I'll f***ing kill you. That's not a threat. What? That's a fact. I'll f***ing kill you. What the f*** are you talking about? Look, you got something none of us have.
Oh, come on. Why is it always this? I mean, I f***ing owe it to myself to do this or that. What if I don't want to?
No. F*** you. You don't owe it to yourself. You owe it to me. Because tomorrow I'm going to wake up and I'll be 50. And I'll still be doing this shit. That's all right. That's fine. mean, you're sitting on a winning lottery ticket. You're too much of a pussy to cash it in. And that's bullshit. Because I'd do fucking anything to have what you got. So would any of these guys. It'd be an insult to us if you're still here in 20 years. Hanging around here is a fucking waste of your time.
You don't know that.
I don't?
No, you don't know that.
Oh, I don't know that. Let me tell you what I do know. Every day I come by your house and I pick you up. And we go out, we have a few drinks and a few laughs, and it's great. You know what the best part of my day is? For about 10 seconds from when I pull up to the curb and when I get to your door. Because I think maybe I'll get up there and I'll knock on the door and you won't be there. No goodbye, no see you later, no nothing. I'm just left. I don't know much, but I know that.
Whoa. I can't handle that scene. I can't handle it at all. That's something else. Like, I just think that... that movie's incredible.
Yeah. Just before you came in and we were talking outside, and of course sport is an ever-present in your life. You're just an unashamed, massive sports fan.
Yeah, 100%.
And one of the kind of hero figures you mentioned before you came in was Michael Jordan.
Yeah. I mean, I think...
You were massive into basketball yourself. And
I was, and played it like my life depended on it. Like, had some notion that I was going to be...
How tall are you?
About 6'1"-ish, 6'2". Yeah. And had some notion that I was going to go make my career in this. And I realize now with hindsight that it was performance that I was into, not basketball. And Michael Jordan was Muhammad Ali. Like, I lived through the time of Muhammad Ali. And guys now listening to this in the 90s who were into ball will say the same thing. Literally every time you turned him on. I remember talking to Ardal O'Hanlon about this. He was lucky enough to go and see him in Chicago. And he said every night, without fail, he'd do something that you just go, how is a human doing this? And without fail, like, Ali had tough fights that you go, this is not what we want to see. It was art what he was doing. And I'm not over, like, look it up and you'll understand.
Listen, finally, Charlotte, as a comedian, are you under pressure to come up with stuff about Brexit? Do you feel that when you stand in front of a London audience or an English audience, they go, come on, what do you think about Brexit? Or are they bored with it? Do they want a release from Brexit?
I do feel a responsibility, not to them, but to us as Irish people in this mess, right? And I have a ton of stuff on this because I'm living this comedy, this dark, dark comedy where you have people coming up to you and saying, you know, Ireland are just, this is a showcase for their ego and no knowledge of the troubles, no knowledge of where the border is, what the border looks like.
So you find yourself defending our position?
Like, you wouldn't believe.
Okay.
In Hereford last Friday night, I nearly got pulled off stage. I mean, this is going on. Like, here's the thing is, it's a really loud minority because at that show where... I had people shouting at me to stop talking about it.
Did you?
Yeah, people shouting at me to get on with the jokes, get away from the politics. And I was like, why can't the jokes be about politics? Like, you assume we're all Remainers. And I was like, I don't assume anything. I'm telling you my perspective.
Yeah.
And these guys are waiting for me afterwards.
Whoa.
And 20 people came up to me before those guys got to me and said, ignore that table. They are a really loud minority here who don't represent us. That's not what Hereford is all about.
And, yeah, know. And furthermore, I think it's a sad shame that it drives a wedge between two nations who, in so many respects, get on with each other so well, ontologically. Like.
Absolutely. And like I say, I've had so many great things happen in the UK. I love it there. And the people are so unbelievably welcoming and nice to us. And Irish comics that walk on stage in London, by and large, the audience assume this is going to be good. And that's an incredible privilege.
Well, Charlotte, listen, I sincerely wish you the very best on your journey.
Thank you, Mario. Thanks for
to here. And it's been a pleasure to reverse the tables on you. I really enjoyed being interviewed by you, and I hope you enjoyed today.
I did.
Charlotte Regan.
Mario Sunday Roast on Today FM with Mario Rosenstock.